Good evening, everyone. Good evening, councilors. It is 5:15. We'll begin our agenda session. We're starting with Vice President Tomanek and the Personnel Committee. Vice President Tomanek is not here, and I'll have Councilor Kennedy read that in.
With pleasure. This is item number two, Resolution 397, approving proposed amendments to the specifications for the existing civil service classification of manager, MIS, including a title change to manager, information technology, and specifying contract benefits for same.
Thank you, Councilor Kennedy. Any questions on item two? Seeing none, we'll move on to planning and economic development under Councilor Nephew.
Number three, Resolution 0408, resolution vacating a 10-foot wide utility easement on Lot 7, Graceland Place Addition. Number four, 24-0409, resolution vacating the unimproved platted right-of-way between Blocks 11 and 12 in Lloyd's Division of Duluth. Number five, Resolution 0378, resolution authorizing a First Amendment to the purchase agreement with James D. McCulley to acquire certain real property in the Lincoln Park neighborhood for $5,000.
Thank you, Councilor Nephew. Any questions on items three through five? Seeing none, we'll move on to Public Works and Utilities. Councilor Mayo.
Thank you, President Randorf. Item six, Resolution 398, authorizing an agreement with Short Elliott Henderson Incorporated for engineering services for the Railroad Street reconditioning project for an amount not to exceed $163,225. Item seven, Resolution 410, awarding a contract to Vite & Company Incorporated for the 2023 lead water service replacement new Duluth neighborhood for a total not to exceed $2,861,207. And item eight, Resolution 412, is authorizing an agreement with MSA Professional Services Incorporated for construction, engineering support, and inspection services for the 2023 lead water service replacement project, New Duluth Neighborhood, for an amount not to exceed $518,570.
Thank you, Councilor Mayo. Councilor Kennedy.
Thank you, President Randorf. I just wanted to check in on number seven and number eight to make sure all the plans were in place, because I know sometimes plans can change. And if the process for letting community members know if still in place and is working, and if you've had any difficulties at all.
President Randorf, Councilor Kennedy. Plans are solid. They continue in place. We're sending out all the appropriate communications. We continue that effort as we go along. We'll have our eyes open if we're missing anybody along the way and make sure we can catch them. But everything's so far working fine.
Could you, and then there's a number that folks know to call, or if I was to receive any calls, I would send that directly to yourself, Mr. Montgomery?
President Randorf, Councilor Kennedy, I'll get you the right number. I would have it probably coming into engineering, and then they will get directly to the folks, but I'll get a specific contact for you to pass on to people.
Thank you, Mr. Montgomery. Any final questions on items six, seven, or eight? Seeing none, we'll move on to Committee of the Whole. That's my committee. This is item nine, Resolution 425, a resolution authorizing transfer of $14,507,890 and assignment of two contracts to the Duluth Economic Development Authority for affordable housing, childcare, and blight reduction. Opening up for questions on item nine. Councilor Forsman.
Thank you, President Randorf. I know we've had multiple discussions about this topic, but one point I just wanted to clarify. I saw there was a letter sent from some of the affordable housing organizations today that I didn't get a chance to read in detail before this meeting, but the $14 million number is a little misleading. The only unallocated ARP money that we have right now is $3.8 million, and that's the two downtown housing projects that aren't moving forward. So I just wanted to put it on the record, and we may look at some language tweaks to go further to put it into the body of the resolution, but none of the projects that were allocated money from the affordable housing bucket that are still moving forward we don't intend on changing any of that within this resolution. So that was one question that I was able to help answer with one of those organizations this afternoon. So just wanted to clarify that, and then would stand for any questions as well as the other authors here.
Well, thank you so much, Councillor Forsman. As a deeper question for Mr. Montgomery on that same line, the one line that they asked as a group is they had a concern for the projects that are near closing. With this transfer of funds, how would that affect current contracts, and could it delay closing? Any worry about closing any of the contracts? And I think specifically there may have been a Center City or a project that's in just almost closing.
President Randolph, I'll see if Ranchetti can address that.
President Randolph, this resolution also transfers those two contracts to DEDA. So now there will be an agreement between DEDA and the two entities that the contracts are between. So the only difference with those contracts is instead of currently they're between the city and those entities, they will now be between DEDA and those entities, and they need to be fulfilled unless amended and something changes.
And so you don't foresee any delay in this change in name only?
President Randolph, no. It's shifting the money to a different entity, and the payments will be made now from DEDA instead of the City of Duluth.
Thank you so much for the clarification. Next in the queue, we have Councillor Mayo.
Thank you, President Randolph. And thank you to the authors for bringing this forward and your work on this. I did want to just note the letter that we received, and I had a chance to read through it as well. And I think the ask in the letter was simply if we could table it and put a pause on it. So that would be my ask, and it doesn't need to be answered tonight. We'll obviously discuss this on Monday as well. But as we continue to discuss this, if we can take some time to talk with those partners, and I think I did get a chance to talk with one of the organizations today very briefly, and just making sure that everyone is kind of in the same loop on this. And then the other asks I think they had in the letter as well that I wanted to point out, the percentage of funding kind of going to each of these buckets of affordable housing, childcare, blight reduction. I think as it sits right now, it's not really defined the percentage of funding that would go to each, whether it's that $3.9 million that's unallocated or if anything else were to open up from these other contracts if something fell through. And then the other thing I was just going to mention too, I think I'd be curious if there'd be interest from the authors in kind of further defining affordable housing with like say 80% AMI or less, so that we can really make sure that when this heads to, if it heads to DEDA, we really know exactly what we're defining affordable housing as. And I think that's kind of what, from my understanding, what the Affordable Housing Coalition has defined affordable housing as, is 80% AMI or less. So would just be interested in those questions.
Which, do you want the first question answered?
Sure.
Okay, sounds good. Councillor Forsman, do you want to tackle a couple of those? I think the first one was the percentages. On the tabling or?
Tabling, percentages, and the definition of affordable housing were the three.
Thank you, President Randolph, Councillor Mayo. I'd only speak for one of the four people listed here, so I'll give my take. Tabling, I think there's potential for that. If I would have had more time before this afternoon during the workday, maybe we could have a conversation, figured some of this stuff out. There's still one more day tomorrow, so we'll see. But I also recognize it's a holiday weekend and staff are busy, so there may not be enough time to get into the weeds on changes before Tuesday. So we'll figure that out, and we can talk about that maybe on Tuesday too. So that's just my take. The percentages, I get that ask. I'm personally against specifying percentages because we may spend $0 on childcare projects, for instance, but it's a potential as we see community projects play out over the next few months to keep open. So I wouldn't want to lock us in on saying we're going to do 33 when we might be shifting around. I think it's likely that the only one that is for sure going to be above zero is affordable housing, but we want to keep our options open for what would make sense. And I'll give you an example of how they work together. We might be spending dollars on blight reduction so that we can do an affordable housing project with a TIF agreement. That's a very real potential outcome of something like this. So I think it's hard to specify percentages. It doesn't mean that we're not going to spend on all these buckets, but it's just that we're not far enough along to say that there's a line item with a dollar amount attached to it. And this is really only $3.8 million. It's going to go pretty quick in the long run.
Thank you, Councilor Forsman. Any other questions? Did that cover your questions for now?
The last one was just the affordable housing and kind of further fleshing out that definition. That's any of the authors too, yeah.
I can just give my take. There was not any requirements in the original resolution when we passed this, and you might remember, for those of you who are here, market rate projects qualified. That doesn't mean that that's the intent here, but I would just want to be thoughtful about that too.
And just to respond to on the percentage thing, I'm not saying, you know, tying us into a specific amount that if we didn't spend that, then it's sitting out there and floating, but kind of developing some guidelines, I think, would be important to kind of guide where the community can see these funds going, because knowing that it is going to DITA, obviously the council can have a role in that of saying, like, here's where we as the council would like to see these funds kind of generally split up, and that, you know, DITA would have the authority to kind of decide where that ends up in the final circumstance.
Thank you, Councilor Mayo. Next in the queue is Councilor Nephew.
President Randorf, I'm going to piggyback on the question you had before. Have we checked in with Center City to see if it would affect their financing? Because I know MHFA is not always the most flexible organization. Did we confirm that having DITA being the person writing the check is not going to be a problem?
President Randorf, Councilor Nephew, I did not confirm it. I do not anticipate it, but I did not confirm it.
I'm hoping that that would be something that we would be able to do, because I do know that some of those funders, even if there's a name on the check that changes, it could lead to some inflexibility, and we don't want to throw a wrench in the project. So just verify that before, otherwise that might be something that we want to consider holding back. That would be my one ask of administration.
Councilor Nephew, we will do so.
Thank you, Councilor Nephew. Any final questions on item 9? Seeing no one in the queue, we'll move on. Public safety, item 10, Councilor Swenson.
Resolution 24-0395, resolution authorizing the acceptance of reimbursement from the United States Department of Justice, Bureau of Justice Assistance, Office of Justice Programs, in the amount not to exceed $18,000 for the reimbursement of the purchase of ballistic vests.
Thank you, Councilor Swenson. Any questions? Seeing none, we'll move on to recreation, libraries, and authorities. Councilor Owl.
President Randorf, item. Item 11, resolution 371, resolution authorizing a lease agreement between the City of Duluth and the Lake Superior and Mississippi Railroad. Item 12, resolution 405, resolution authorizing a three-year non-exclusive license agreement with Top Hat Carriage Services LLC for the use of space in Lincoln Park to temporarily hitch horses and carriages for $500 per year.
Thank you, Councilor Owl. Any questions on items 11 and 12? Councilor Swenson.
President Randorf, my question is on number 12 with the horse carriage. Just curious how that rate is set to $500 per year and if that's consistent.
President Randorf, Councilor Swenson, that is consistent with what it's been in prior years. It's really a de minimis kind of rate that was set. Didn't want to get into a whole lot of around with rates, given it's a fairly simple deal. So it's consistent with what it's been in the last 3 years.
Thank you.
Thank you, Councilor Swenson. Final questions on 11 and 12. Seeing none, we'll move on to our ordinances. We're under planning and economic development. Councilor Nephew.
Number 13, 24-020, an ordinance amending Chapter 10, Section 26 of the Duluth City Code to delete references to a certificate of approval and to delegate administration and enforcement of the electrical code to the state of Minnesota.
Thank you, Councilor Nephew. Any questions on item 13? And just as a reminder, this is the one that we have our special meeting on June 3rd to be able to approve this ordinance. Yes, Councilor Mayo.
Thank you, President Randolph. I had a question on this one in terms of cost, because I understand we're now going to kind of outsource the inspections to the state of Minnesota rather than doing this in-house for the city. Is this going to change? Are we expecting any cost changes as far as having previously staffed this in-house?
President Randolph, Councilor Mayo, net no. The wages for these two positions plus benefits, ballpark $200,000. We get inspection fees that have been set pretty closely with for the electrician inspections, about $200,000. So the net effect will not have the wages, but we also won't have the inspection fees. So it's really not a cost-driven process here, and there's no net adverse or beneficial effect coming out of this process.
And are we, I guess, is it pretty common for cities of our size around the state to utilize the state for this type of inspection then, or?
Minneapolis uses the state for all their electrical inspections, as an example. The state does electrical inspections widely all across the state, across counties, cities. So it's not unusual at all. The two individuals that have left to join the state remain in this area, and they'll be doing the work in this area. So it's not, you know,
sure.
They're not going down Twin Cities. They're in this area doing work for the state, for Duluth and in this area.
Appreciate it.
Thank you, Councilor Mayo. Councilor Kennedy.
Thank you, President Randolph. My question's for staff. Are we assuming that this is going to be forever, or is there a sunset date? Because I'm guessing we would like for these employees to come back to an employee of this city. And more importantly, thinking about some of our labor and unions.
President Randolph, Councilor Kennedy, first off, these were union employees, and working for the state, they will be union employees. So this isn't like people are being taken out into non-union shops. So it's just from one union under us to a union with the state. The state requires a 5-year moratorium, just because it takes the state a lot to realign their resources and their processes going forward. So for the next 5 years, this will be the arrangement, and then it can be revisited after that.
And so what is that process like? Does it automatically then come back to the city to take care of it, or is there a process where we have to write an agreement, we have to go back and write an ordinance, change the ordinance?
President Randolph, Councilor Kennedy, this is the way it remains unless changed. And so 5 years from now, and the only issue here is it cannot be changed for the next 5 years, because the state isn't gonna just do this off on. They're either gonna do it or they're not. And they have a 5-year de minimis period. After 5 years, we can go back to the state and talk about whether this is something that we want to take back into the city or leave as it is.
Thank you.
Thank you, Councilor Kennedy. Any final questions on item 13? Seeing none, we'll move on to Public Works and Utilities. Councilor Mayo.
Thank you, President Randolph. Item 14, or Ordinance 21, is authorizing a street easement to the city of Rice Lake over, under, and across real property at the Riley Road Tree Farm for nominal consideration. And if I may, I did have a question on this. I'm just curious. I understand this is for Rice Lake constructing a turnaround up there, and they're responsible for the construction costs. But as far as like clearing or plowing or other costs with the maintenance of the street, is the city of Duluth responsible for that, or will the city of Rice Lake be responsible for that?
Randolph, Councilor Mayo, this is all Rice Lake. They would take on responsibility. And it's, if you're standing out on Jean Duluth Road looking up at the soccer fields, it's 80 by 80 little square in the far back left corner of that whole soccer complex. So way in the back, left-hand side, as you're looking from Jean Duluth Road. And it's right at the end, I forget the name of the street. from Rice Lake that dead ends right there. They just want to turn around kind of for their plow trucks and stuff. And they so they will maintain that, clear it, plow it, go for it. And it has no impact to our activities there, our soccer or baseball or all the stuff we do up there.
Fantastic. Thank you.
Councilor Mayo, any final questions on item 14? Seeing none, we'll move on to our ordinance to be read for the second time. These are the ones that we'll vote on Tuesday, May 28th. We'll start with finance, with Councilor Forsman.
Thank you, President Randorf. Ordinance 17, establishing a funding framework that uses both annual appropriations and the OPEB trust fund to pay the cost of other post-employment benefits.
Thank you, Councilor Forsman. Any questions? Seeing none, we'll move on. Yes, Councilor Durwachter, did you have a question on that one? No, okay, sounds good. Moving on to purchasing and licensing. Councilor Durwachter.
Item 16, resolution 16-0, an ordinance amending section 41 to 29, or 41-29 of the Duluth City Code, 1959, as amended, regarding surplus property disposal procedures as it relates to canine partners.
Thank you, Councillor Durwachter. Questions on item 16? Seeing none, we'll move on to planning and economic development. Councillor Nephew.
17, ordinance 11, an ordinance amending sections 50-14.5, residential traditional, 50-14.6, residential urban, and 50-15.2, mixed-use neighborhood, related to dimensional standards in these zone districts of the Unified Development Chapter. Number 18, ordinance 12, an ordinance amending the official zoning map of the Duluth City, of the City of Duluth, to reclassify parcels 010-0090-00480 and 010-0090-00490 and 010-0090-00500 and 010-2119-00530 from residential traditional R1 to residential planned RP, located adjacent to the north of Bald Eagle Circle, Hawks Ridge Estate subdivision.
Thank you, Councilor Nephew. Any questions on items 17 or 18? Councilor Forsman.
Randorf, thank you, President Randorf. I might have questions, but I thought maybe since there's an amendment here, Councilor Nephew, maybe if you could walk us through that.
It open. So basically, we are going back to what the original staff recommendation was, with 8 units per acre, with the maximum heights not to exceed 30 feet unless there's a tuck under garage. With a tuck under a garage, the height could go up to 35 feet. For the most part, otherwise it goes back to that. There's some changes on what could be built from residential single family use. Cottage homes, townhomes, and accessory uses shall be the garages and parking area for temporary storage by homeowners for recreational vehicles such as campers, boats, and so forth. So this goes back to the original staff recommendations, with the one change of being the tuck under garage with the height of 35 feet. Is that what you're looking for, Councilor Forsman?
Was. Thank you. So I guess my question would be for staff, and it's around the density. So the density, as I recall from our last meeting or two meetings ago, I don't remember when it was it 24 homes, and then each would have access to having an accessory dwelling unit. So in staff's estimation, does this get you to basically on par with R1 is the genesis and the heart of my question.
President Randorf, Councilor Frisman, I believe there are 4 acres up there that would be rezoned, and at 8 units per acre would get you to the 32 units per acre, each allowable with a...
So, but one has to be put in preserve, right? So how does that calculation work with 3 that are developable?
I'm going to speak out of this is where I love having a...
Developer needs to answer. That's fine, too. I just figured staff would be the most appropriate to turn to first.
Senior planner at the last meeting who was unable to... They can ask that, answer that specific question. My understanding, though, and I will just have to verify, is that with the 4 acres, it's a 32 units. But I will verify.
Thank you.
Thank you, Councilor Forsman. Next in the queue, we have Councilor Mayo.
Thank you, President Randorf. My question is also for staff. Just given the email communications we've received today from the developer, kind of mentioning that they said any amendment of like even this type would potentially not allow the project to move forward. So my question was, if this is kind of going back to the staff report, wondering if the staff report had been presented to the developer, obviously in conversation, if the developer was in favor of this moving forward to Planning Commission as it originally was proposed by staff, because it seems as if now they're saying that this would not be, or it would be detrimental to the project if passed in this manner.
President Randorf, Councilor Mayo, my staff understood that the staff recommendation would not, that this was acceptable. The staff recommendation was acceptable by the developer.
Thank you. That's all I have for now.
Is the developer here to speak with?
President Randorf, I believe there's a developer representative.
Could we get clarity from that individual on this particular question? We did get an email from the developer today, so it's a little confusing for us.
President Randorf, Cheryl Fosdick. I got the same email. I don't know what's behind his concerns right now. I do know that his resolution of his concerns about liability and property types and whatnot will be resolved should this get to the regulating plan. That's his intention, is to resolve them in the regulating plan. I was also told that there would be no representatives for him here tonight, but I'm here. And my understanding is that ideally he cannot do the project with less than 8 units per acre density. That 30 feet height maximum is acceptable, but 35 feet would give some elbow room to allow for creative design based on minimizing the impervious surface. So it isn't just about tuck under garages, but we can work with 30 feet if we have to. We're just asking for some elbow room. Not every unit will need 35 feet by any means. As for the uses, I think he is investigating at this point how he can best protect the association from liability issues related to the field use. I think he is concerned that there may be, he's had some pressures from surrounding neighbors to be sure that everything is in order exactly the way the words place it at the moment. My understanding is that the regulating plan will certainly, it has to be approved, and it will certainly involve the discussion of the types of buildings that are permitted in RP. that's what I know.
Thank you.
A follow-up?
Did you want to have a follow-up? Yes, please.
Thank you for being here. And I'm sorry if you're put on the spot. I know you're the only person here tonight. So if you can't answer this question either, that's totally understandable, given you're not the developer in this instance. But do you know a subsequent email we did receive with the uses outlined? He did redline all of the things that he didn't want to allow. But why would there be concern, I guess, if we were to outline that in an RP zoning versus later at the regulating plan?
President Randolph, Councilor Mayo, what he intended with that list came from discussion at the last meeting, where there was some thought that maybe it would be a good idea to name the things he was not going to intend to do, and it might make people in the neighborhood feel better about his intentions. So he redlined, crossed out the things that he did not intend to consider as part of his development, to make clear the things that he does want to consider. He has a concern that if he lists everything, he's going to be required to do one of everything, which we've told him is not going to be the case. It's part of the resolution of the regulating plan. But that's why that sheet is out there. It's as a resource.
Thank you.
Councilor Nephew.
Thank you, President Randolph. So I am going back to my notes from the last agenda session, and here is my understanding that the RP requires a public benefit, so therefore only 3 acres would be developed. So 3 times 8 equals 24, and so it's 24 that would be there in that plan. And that's my understanding. And also under single family, I have in my notes that it would be about 24 units under single family. They just would have a larger footprint. Am I looking back at my notes correctly on this?
President Randolph, Councilor Nephew, you're comparing the R1 allowances versus the RP. No, the R1 allowances allow for an accessory building for every house that is buildable, and on 4 acres.
24 structures is what we kind of ballparked, and they could be duplexes or with accessory dwelling units. So therefore, under R1, you could, in theory, end up with 48 units, and then under the RP that we're doing, 1 acre of preserve, 3 get developed, 8 units per acre, so that's 24 max that would be there under the RP. Is my math correct?
President Randolph, Councilor Nephew, it is correct, yes. And there is no auxiliary accessory dwelling allowance in the RP. So 24 is 24.
And with the 1 acre of preserve for the public benefit, there is no chance that that 1 acre would be developed, and that's part of the RP requirement, correct?
And Councilor Nephew, that's true.
Thank you for the clarification.
Thank you, Councilor Nephew. Next in the queue, we've got Councilor Derwachter.
Thank you, President Randolph. Could we please clarify, I'm not seeing any language in this ordinance or in any amendment that is guaranteeing that 1 acre will not be developed. Am I missing that?
President Randolph, Councilor Derwachter, under the residential planned zone district, the developer is required to provide a public benefit. The idea is that 30% of the acreage will be dedicated to preserve for that public benefit, which is of course 1 acre.
I ask a follow up. So where is that guaranteed in the language of changing to RP? The public benefit, that sounds very vague. So is it written in the RP?
President Randolph, Councilor Derwachter, it is in the outline of the RP within the code.
That specifies 30%.
President Randolph, Councilor Derwachter, there is a list of options for what constitutes a public benefit. Reserve is one of those.
I do have a follow-up, if I may. I have been reading the UDC, thank you. However, if we were to switch to RP, he could opt for another option for a public benefit instead of that acre. to be undeveloped after we approve it?
Randorf, Councillor Durwalker, I believe the public benefit identified in the staff recommendation is what I will have to verify. And not President Randorf, Councillor Durwalker, I'm not the specialist in the UDC. That's what, my apologies.
Thank you, Councillor Durwalker. Next in the queue is Councillor Forsman.
Thank you, President Randorf. Thank you, Cheryl, for representing. And I have a question around that density. So I'm wondering if it might be helpful to put in parentheses as a friendly amendment, if you're open to it, Councillor Nephew, or however we go about this, to just specify that it's 24 units, because I know that that's been one of these points that has been thrown out there in question. So if that 24 units total might be helpful, just to show clearly that this is not 32, and that's something the developer is open to, I would suggest that as a little bit of a clarifier here.
Thank you, Councillor Forsman. Councillor Nephew?
Councillor Forsman, yes, I would be open to that, and I would actually add to that, because there seems to be, I think, RP hasn't been something that has been used a lot, so I think there's a lot of confusion on it. I would also say, acknowledge that the 1 acre is for the public benefit and preserve, and just so we can have clarity, I think adding those two things in there, would that be something the developer, so 24 housing units, with 1 acre of preserve.
President Randorf, Council Nephew, I can respond to that. I think Mr. Erickson would feel very comfortable with the minimal 1 acre public benefit. I do know that he is also planning a trail, walkthrough, a field, stairway up to the roadway, all as public benefit. So I know that he has from day one considered that probably maybe the most important aspect of the RP zoning.
Thank you, Councillor Nephew. Next in the queue is Councillor Durwalker.
I have several questions, but I'll just ask one now. The field that you mentioned, would that be used as a rental, any capacity?
President Randorf, Councilor Durwalker, my current understanding is that one of the many things that Mr. Erickson wants to consider when he moves to the regulating plan, which again must be approved, is the possibility of creating, for instance, of many possibilities, a nonprofit for the field and the meeting house or meeting space, lodge, whatever we want to call it at the end, in an effort to reduce the liability for injuries on the field, to keep all the associates of the entire development less liable. I don't know if he'll be able to do that. There are Minnesota statutes regulating associations that he also has to deal with, but those are issues to be dealt with in the regulating plan. He has never talked about renting. He has never talked about that, but I do know that the letter I got today said something about the possibility of it. That's the first time I've seen it, and I know that he is considering that in terms of the resolution of the regulating plan. It's not on the top of his list of anything to do. He's going to consider it.
Thank you, Councillor Durwalker. Next in the queue is Councillor Forsman.
Thank you, President Randorf. I know, again, our charge is density, use, and height. But one of the questions that a neighbor posed to me was around the topography. So I might just ask you to relay this question to Mr. Erickson and ask that he respond back to the entire council. But there was a question on the ridge line. Obviously, where Hawks Ridge goes, I think there's some proposed townhomes around there. And there is a section on a topographical map where it looks like it might be a 20-foot difference, but that, I don't know who did this map that was shared with me, but I just would ask for some clarification around, is it basically the same as the abutting neighborhood, where it's that, I think it's 850 feet, if I remember correctly, or are they going past that into the 870, 880 range? So I'm not asking you to answer, Cheryl. You can if you want, but I would just appreciate a little bit of clarification so I can get back to that constituent.
President Randorf, Councillor Durwalker, to your question about the open space, remaining open space, and or being changed, in the staff packet, you'll see a concept map that was submitted that identifies areas that are civic as well as trail space. The concept map will remain in place, period. If the concept map were to be amended away from the approval, it would have to come back through council. So any area identified as civic would remain as civic.
Thank you, Mr. Ronchetti. Next in the queue, I've got Councillor Durwalker.
Thank you, President Randorf. The stairway that you mentioned, who would be responsible for maintaining the snow removal on that stairway?
President Randorf, Councillor Durwalker. We have always talked about Mr. Erickson and the rest of the association being responsible for that component. That's what I can tell you. I have spoken to him, and that's what he's told me. But I can ask him to respond to that if you would like.
Next in the queue is Councillor Mayo.
Thank you, President Randorf. Mr. Ronchetti, so you had spoken that if there are any amendments to the concept map, it would have to come back through council. Can you clarify? So if the property were to exchange hands, say, after the rezoning, my understanding is that the land use supervisor is still the ultimate person because it has been rezoned then, so it would not come to council. There would be a new regulating plan developed that would be sent to the land use supervisor. Is that correct, or can you clarify?
President Randorf, Councillor Mayo. So we often use RP for residential plan zone district and RP for regulating plan, and I think there gets to be a little bit of confusion when we do that. I myself suffer from that. The zoning, the RP, residential planned zoning runs with the land, and anything that is approved as a part of that rezone, including the concept map, runs with the land. And so the regulating plan that is approved by the land use supervisor, that does things like architectural design standards, those kinds of things, that can be amended by a future owner of the property. But the concept map that was submitted as a part of the staff recommendation cannot be altered by any future owner without coming back through the council.
Okay, so any future use of that space would have to comply with the concept map. Follow-up question on the concept map. I wasn't a part of the Coffee Creek or other developments. How fleshed out typically are concept maps? Because to me, there's not a ton of detail with this, and that's, you know, obviously we're not at the regulating plan point, but do we usually have more detail in those, or is this?
Randorf, Councillor Mayo, it depends. Something like the Bluestone development, which was a planned development, they were very specific, oftentimes specific as to what building would go where, and that ended up with somewhere between 5 and 10, I think it was 7, different amendments. And so the intent here is to not have to come back to the council as often for amendments and just regulate it through the regulating plan. And so we encourage the developer to be a little more generic in the concept plan, simply laying out where uses would be applicable within the zone district.
Thank you. Just to clarify, so the concept map that we're talking about, is that from the 4-9 meeting versus, because the one I was looking at was the 3-12 meeting, which is just kind of like shapes and kind of outlines of different areas, but we're referring to the most detailed latest version. Is that correct?
President Randorf, Councillor Mayo, it would be the one that was submitted as a part of the staff packet to the Planning Commission. I am looking at your attachment on the agenda dated April 4th, 2024 to the Planning Commission, and it would be the, I believe, eighth page of the document. It says page one of three, but I know that's of the document itself. Did that right, yes, eighth page.
Okay, thank you, because I know this came to the Planning Commission twice, essentially, because of some public comment dates or something like that. So I saw that there are two different attachments. So does the you're looking at attachment four, correct?
Is that the one?
Attachment six, correct.
President Kennedy, Councilor Mayu, correct, attachment six.
Thank you, appreciate it.
It may help the council if you just send that correct attachment to all council so we all are looking at the same one, perhaps.
And or if it is the correct attachment on the agenda, attachment six.
Okay, so it is the correct one. Okay. Thank you, Councilor Mayo. Next, Councilor Owl.
Randolph. I just want to go back to the public benefit. I'm just still wrapping my head around it. I understand there's four lots. And out of the four lots, they're building on three lots, right? The developer's proposed building on the three lots, and the 30% is going towards a public benefit. But if one of the lots, my understanding is that it's not buildable. Isn't it with the bedrock and the forestry that's there, my understanding is one of the lots is not buildable. Does that still go towards that count, towards the public benefit?
President Randorf, Councilor Owl, the parcels will have to come back for subdivision. They have not yet been subdivided. So whether or not they're buildable, whether, you know, they have not done geotechnical, they have not done, to my understanding, so they have not determined what is buildable and what is not buildable. But the council will see this project again when it comes back for subdivision. And at that point, you'll be able to see which parcels they're considering building on.
The parcels that are buildable, when the subdivision does come back, out of those spots, is that where the 30% would be coming from, or the total?
President Randorf, Councilor Owl, it's the total 4 acres. The community benefit would be the preserve out of the total 4 acres.
Thank you, Councilor Owl. Next in the queue is Councilor Derwachter.
Dorf, Cheryl Fosdick, you've been very wonderful. I know you're a wonderful architect. I think you have helped earn trust in this project with your plan and the way you express your interests in preserving nature. And I understand he has signed a contract with you. At any point, however, is he able to cancel that contract and choose an architect that would do anything at his whim?
President Randorf, Councilor Derwachter, yes, I can exit the contract and he can exit the contract. And we have not, I actually haven't engaged with him under contract yet. So I've done no paid work for Mr. Erickson yet. I contacted him originally because I'm very interested in this and what got me started here. So I want to make one correction for the lots you're talking about are different sizes. So it isn't just four equal lots. It's three very large lots and one lot that is part of the Hawks Ridge development. So it's a little bit different.
Thank you so much. Any final questions on item 17 or 18? Councilor Derwachter.
Thank you, President Randorf. I would like to go back to the main reason why you've recommended we switch from R1 to RP. And my understanding is one of the largest reasons is to change the setback from the home to the lot lines. Is it possible to build under R1 with those wonderful setback changes with variances, with a variance request?
President Randorf, Councilor Derwachter, order to qualify for a variance, the landowner would have to prove a practical difficulty. Senator Fosdick here could correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that the driving factor isn't necessarily just the setbacks. I think it's the ability to have a flexible site design that goes beyond just setbacks and allows, the guiding principle of an RP is to be able to take, to have creative site design in order to take advantage or enhance or complement the area of this one in particular, the natural landscape. Again, allowing that flexible site design, the proximity of buildings to each other, the limitation of lot size, the different lot sizes, I think all of those things combined are really the driving factor. And I don't know that any of them would be solved by proving a practical difficulty for a variance.
May I follow up to that? So it would be possible, though, to alter setbacks with a variance request, correct? And he's attempting to prove to us that there's site difficulty by making the request to RP. Wouldn't that be similar to trying to prove that with a variance request?
President Randorf, Councilor Durwalker, I would not speculate on whether or not they would qualify for a practical difficulty because that was not a part of the staff process during this assessment. That would have to restart and go from the beginning to see and determine whether or not a practical difficulty could be proven. I will also point out that every parcel in the R1 district would have to prove the practical difficulty. It would not be over the entire site. And minimum property size as well.
Thank you. Any final questions? Councilor Owl.
Director Ronchetti, I'm just trying to understand the zoning change still, so if you could clarify something for me, because Councilor Durwalker brought up something interesting last time that I did some further research into, just with the language and understanding the code. Are the surrounding neighborhoods currently zoned R1, right?
President Randorf, Councilor Owl, the Hawks Ridge Estates is zoned R1, yes.
And I was thinking back to when Councilor Durwalker brought up spot zoning, and I understand that in Minnesota, under code, spot zoning is illegal, and when I think about spot zoning, Minnesota courts have stated that this term applies to zoning changes typically limited to small plots of land which establish a use classification inconsistent with the surrounding areas and create a island of non-conforming use within a larger zoned property, and that in the state of Minnesota is illegal. Can you please help me understand why the neighborhood is in R1, why this wouldn't be in a spot zoning change? I had some residents concerned about this.
President Randorf, Councilor Owl, this is a residential district adjacent to a residential district. I am not an attorney who is familiar with the legal parameters of spot zoning. I do know that this rezoning does line up with the future land use, which is in the ordinance of our comprehensive plan. And so I don't know that anyone here is a specialist in spot zoning, but it is a residential district adjacent to a residential district.
Thank you. I just figured I'd ask and ask for a clarification since it was brought up previously, and I was curious on how that plays out here. That will be it.
Thank you, Councilor Owl. Next in the queue, I've got Councilor Mayo.
Thank you, President Randorf. I just had a question, I guess, and this might be a question for the developer to follow up on, too, is just wondering about their history of developments of this size in particular, because it seems like, you know, we have a number of projects moving forward in the city, but as we know, you can run into financial problems and things can get stalled, and obviously we have even one in my district down on London Road that has had some issues down there. Is there, you know, any plan for the speed at which this would come together? I know the developer did send an email, I believe, to Councilor Forsman about some funding mechanisms associated with this, but just kind of wondering what is the plan should this rezoning go through and they're able to move forward? Is it going to be, you know, spread out over 10 years, or is this a two-year development process? What are we kind of looking at?
President Randorf, Councilor Mayo, we do not have a development agreement in place that would stipulate those things. This is a private development on private land without any public participation in the financials. And so the speed with which it is developed and what phase would be incumbent on the developer.
Okay. And so the regulating plan goes to the land use supervisor, but then the development agreement is who in staff is ultimately responsible for that? Because I know does it come to council still at some point for a final approval on that or no?
Randorf, Councilor Mayo, it is undetermined whether or not a development agreement would be necessary. I do not expect that there will be any incentives or city participation in the financials that would warrant a development for or development agreement for that purpose. Occasionally there is a development agreement that is put in place for things like infrastructure, landscape, escrow, those kinds of things. We are not yet at that place.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Councilor Mayo. Councilor Derwachter.
Thank you, President Randorf. My understanding is there's heavy erosion on the steep bank next to the Amity Creek, and has the city done any assessment on what measures need to be taken to prevent any further erosion and rebuild that bank?
President Randorf, Councilor Derwachter, we have not.
Okay, thank you.
Any final questions? Councilor Owl.
This question is more for city administration. At the, I'm kind of curious about, actually, I answered my own question. Never mind. Thank you.
Any final questions? Seeing none, so are we expecting then an alteration to Councilor Nephew's amendment? So we'll be seeing that on Tuesday with the new writing. Is that correct?
President Randorf, Councilor Nephew, I've taken notes from the requests here today. I am out of the office tomorrow. However, I do have staff that will be available to work on it. Our goal would be to get it in tomorrow morning.
Perfect. Thank you so much. Okay, seeing no other questions, we'll move on. Last item, Committee of the Whole. That's under my committee. Ordinance 19 is an ordinance amending Chapter 2, Article 2, Section 2-3, and Chapter 2, Article 5, Sections 2-3.1 of the Duluth City Code to expand the city administrator's authority to sign city contracts, collective bargaining agreements, and leases. Any questions on item 19? Seeing none, that ends our agenda session. Have a good evening.